everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Your Career is a Choice or a Chance. And this season, we're focusing on Gen AI in the workplace. I'm your host, Yael. Today, I'm super excited to have a very special guest, Itai Gadot, the Creative and Communication Strategy Lead. Together, Itai and I are going to explore a topic of multimodality, which is such a sophisticated name.
Hey, Yael. What's up?
Before we begin, I'm reminding us that our co-host Alex is also here with us. And Alex is here to bring unique AI perspective to the conversation. And as always, is going to ask the final question in our discussion. Alex?
Thank you, Yael. And welcome, Itai. Great to have you with us today.
So Itai, maybe we start with a very basic question of what is multimodality?
Wow, this is a great question, obviously, but let me start first by thanking you for having me on your show. I'm very excited. So what is multimodality in AI? So, you know, I was thinking about it and looking at it from a more philosophical point of view, I think it's like a Renaissance person. Today's Leonardo da Vinci, that is multifaceted, you know, got all kinds of skills and ways to communicate and to invent things. The more practical way, and it's something that I ran through ChatGPT before our session today, they look at it as the Swiss Army knife. You know, you have all kinds of tools, and eventually it provides you a set of tools to do something, to help you in the great outdoors, let's say. So, you know, what is that Renaissance person or entity? Multimodality in AI uses various modes of data and different communication streams. And it revolves around text, images, sound, video, and even code. And when you combine everything together, it's like the input and output of AI, not just from one, you know, text to text. It's a very of data modes, data types, and communication streams. So basically what it helps us to do, it helps us to create seamless reasoning, decision-making, and even analysis of all the data that's coming in and how you communicate it to the outer world. And it also helps us to identify the context. So when you identify the context, it helps you create a more accurate determination, so accurate decisions. I'll give you an example. So let's say if you take facial recognition, and you paired it with NLP. So suddenly you can get a better identification of who the machine is talking with or who you're talking with. And it also can provide you the sentiment of that person. Are they happy? Are they sad? Are they eager to finish the call? Are they excited to speak with you? Is there something on their mind? So this is an example of how multimodality is working and can help us on day-to-day lives. It's very, very like a human. It's seamless integrations across the board. If you're looking at a Turing test, if you look and talk with a Google Assistant or you talk with some deliverables that come from a machine, sometimes you won't recognize that you're talking to a machine, which means the machine passed the Turing test.
What are other use cases for multimodal AI?
If you're looking at the industrial vertical, okay, so in the industrial vertical, when you're using multimodal AI, then you can better optimize the manufacturing process. You can improve product quality. You can reduce the maintenance cost. Okay, you can be more effective. You can apply cost leadership, and that will help you in the industry. Let's say if you're looking at the health vertical. Okay, so imagine that now you can get the patient's vital signs, and you can get different diagnostics. Of data and the different records that you have on that patient, and you bring them all together and create a new insight out of that. So the treatment will be improved. The treatment will be better because you're combining a lot of data from different sources and different types that are not necessarily available at that real time to the physician. Another thing is that, you know, we're always talking about, you know, automotive cars and mobility. So look at automotive. For example, and I think we all already see those signs today. If you're doing by mistake, you learned lane departing, okay? So the car will tell you, hey, you need to go back to your lane. Now imagine that it also recognizes that you're shutting your eyes to more than just X amount of milliseconds, which means that you're tired, or that your head is going down, or that you're talking, and it recognizes through visual, through voice, through all kinds of other sensors that you're not completely driving the car or fully engaged with driving the car. So that can actually help save lives. Let's talk about, for example, robotics, okay? Using a lot of sensors. Now, so robotics, the robots of today, you know, so they're using cameras, they're using microphones, they're using even using GPS. So the whole interface with the environment, with people, with object is completely different and enhanced.
How will it influence work?
When I introduced Gen AI for 2024, I'm looking at it as year zero of Gen AI in the workplace. Because up until now, we saw a lot of tools and a lot of processes. And I think that 2024 will be the first year that we're actually using Gen AI across the board in every day that, you know, in everything that we do in our work, creating different KPIs, and we start measuring the effectiveness, the cost leadership that it provides. So it's a very exciting time to be in 2024 in terms of that. Now, looking specifically on our working environment, I think, you know, it affects almost everything. For example, it can create better collaboration and communication between people, talking about the multimodality of AI. It can obviously improve the decision-making and the time to market for those decision-making. You know, enough with desktop research that will take you weeks in preparations. Data in, data out, good insights, and you decide what's best for you. Every industry, every vertical are now applying AI, Gen AI, multimodality, and I think this next year will be fascinating to watch in terms of how each vertical and industry are adapting and onboarding different tools and processes, and of course training the people. You know, and also there's a lot of resentment, you know, in certain industries or among certain units that they say, "Hey, Gen AI or AI is here to steal my job," and you know, they're saying that AI won't take your job. It's the person who knows AI will do it.
My question is, there are ethical challenges, right? They rise with working with Gen AI in general and multimodal, probably much more. How do we, you know, developers and content creators, how should we address the, you know, this responsibility?
Let's take one step backwards and let's look at the thing, because it started to run really, really fast, because ChatGPT originally was launched prior to the original launching time, okay? So that creates all the motion in the industry. And I think that now we need to look at it in a very responsible kind of way. Let's say, you know, we're looking here at data privacy. We're looking at security elements. We're looking at different legal and IP aspects. We're looking at a lot of biases. I mean, as we say, the data that you brings in, that's the quality of data that you come out. And if you, the data that you throw in Gen AI is biased, which is, by the way, so will the deliverable or the output will be. So I think biases is something that we need to address really, really hard. Also a different ethical concern like transparency, fairness, how we ensure the responsible use of that. You know, if you're looking at the atomic bomb, if you're looking at that dynamite, okay, it's the same question, okay? This is very, very, you know, big power in the, right in the, literally, you know, fingertips. So how do we use this? And I think that, you know, to address it, it's not just me thinking about data governance, creation of different ethical frameworks definitely needed to be there. The different monitoring, you know, we need to make sure that everything is monitored, everything is under control. Everything that has to do with bias, it has to be mitigated to make sure that the bias, you know, we keep it under control. And I think that at the end of the day, we will see international regulatory institutes that will emerge and create a standardization, will create different control, you know, just like nuclear power. We need to control it. It's huge power, can be used for good. Make sure that we don't misuse it. And I think that the last two our concerns, and something that we need to address are the physiological and the philosophical questions that Gen AI and multimodal brings to us.
So if you had a crystal ball and you were thinking of the trends and what would the, you know, the future shape like, what do you think you'll see there?
So I think we'll see in those emerging trends, we'll see a lot of advancement in natural language processing, a lot of integrated virtual reality, IoT devices that, you know, talk to each other. I mean, if you go to the, we call it the smart home. So suddenly you go, you enter your home and cameras, Alexa, movement, even, you know, hearing your, how you breathe. So there's so many sensors around us, okay? Dozens of billions of IoT devices are out there and they need to talk to each other. And they're all different sensors, different data types. Okay, so this is something very big. I think also that, you know, creating more immersive, more intuitive, more personalized interactions, you know, the how we create that seamless merge between what we put as input and what we get out as the output, and where machine and human interact and talk to each other. And, you know, for me, you know, once we lose the keyboard, we lose the smartphone, we even lose the smart glasses, okay? That will be the next step.
Wow, thanks, Itai. This is really fascinating. And now I'd like to call to extend our discussion and call Alex in. Alex?
Thanks, Yael. Itai, in what unexpected ways do you anticipate multimodal AI reshaping the conventional boundaries of human-machine interaction? And how might these changes revolutionize communication and collaboration across various industries?
Great question. You know, apropos multimodality, the fact that we are talking to each other, this is it, almost passing the Turing test. So you've mentioned unexpected, and I think unexpected is the key word here, because I wouldn't assume to say what will happen a year or 2 years from now. You know, you can imagine if you would ask me this question a year ago, I would never think that we would sit here and talk together and have this podcast about multimodality, not now, at the beginning of 2024. So I think we're rapidly getting closer and closer to that singularity point, where past that, we will really won't be able to predict what will happen. But to answer your question, I think what I believe we'll aim for are the seamless human-machine interfaces that will make all those physical, cumbersome interfaces that we use today, as I mentioned, like the laptop, like the phone, like other interfaces, redundant. And, you know, if to quote the Google executives who talked about Gemini, and Gemini is the Google multimodal AI, so they say it's as transformational to our lives as the web, electricity, or fire. This is how enormous and huge shift in humanity the influence on humankind, this is how they see it. I also believe that it's there. And as I mentioned before, we're looking at very philosophical questions. Multimodality provides everything that a human does and creates. To finish up with a quote by the legendary Morpheus from Matrix, who challenged Neo, and he told him, free your mind. So free your mind. This is what will help us to do, hopefully.
Thanks, Itai. Thanks, Alex. This was a wonderful, wonderful introduction to multimodality. And see you in the future.
Thank you, Yael. Thank you, Alex. Happy to be here.